And welcome to the Indie Dev Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Voiles. With me this week is Michael Hicks. Michael is a designer and musician of Pillar, a collection of mini games, each with their own unique personalities and challenges, and it's headed to PlayStation 4. Previously, Michael and I had coordinated the Indie Game Summer Uprising in 2012. It was the third one we had had. It was a showcase for XNA developers on the Xbox 360. Additionally, Michael has created Sententia and released it at that time as well. As though that's not enough, Michael has finished college this summer and earned a BA in computer science. Michael, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Dave.
So you are quite a busy person. I've got to say, I work with students on a daily basis, and considering you just graduated from college, you have quite a bit under your belt. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I stayed pretty busy in college, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't only the third Summer Uprising you had helped coordinate, but you had released several games at that point. So like I said, we had Sententia, but what else did you work on before that?
I did a couple of space shooter games on Xbox Live indie games called Honor and Vengeance. There was one, and then there was Honor and Vengeance 2. Okay. And I did those when I was in high school, senior year of high school, I did those. So those were like my first, my first big adventure into indie games, I guess, were those games. So.
Holy cow. Yeah, and most students are just starting to dip their toes into, you know, the whole idea of, do I want to make games? Do I not?
Right,
or do
yeah.
I understand programming, and you're already releasing games.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was always a dream I had to make, like, an Xbox game, and then they had the tools, which was XNA, so I was like, I got to get on this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, because remember when you're working on that first game, I was writing about video games at that time, and that's when I stumbled across it.
Yeah, at Armless Octopus, I think, right?
Yes. Rest in peace, Armless Octopus.
Yeah,
although we didn't really ever formally close it down, so at some point I've got to do the burial rites. Who knows?
Yeah. It was a pretty cool scene to be a part of, for sure.
Yeah, oh, I agree. So when you were in school, did what programming languages did it have you learning there? Or let's take a step back. Where did you go to school?
I went to school at a Full Sail University down in Winter Park, Florida, and it's pretty much a school that specializes in entertainment stuff. So they have degrees that are kind of specialized in film and then video games and so on. Mm-hmm. So I did the game development path. And we pretty much, I mean, you got a little bit of everything. I mean, we did some stuff in Unity and so on, but it was primarily C++. And it geared you up for a final project where you did your own engine in C++ and so on. So,
I mean, looking back, do you think it was worth the time or the effort? And how did you feel about C++ and then transitioning to XNA?
For me personally, I was already making games at that point, so I didn't necessarily learn how to make games at school, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I didn't learn the technical stuff or the creative, or how to be creative at school. But what I did take away from school was, like, the social aspect of it, like, being around other people who are like-minded, you know what I mean?
Definitely.
That was I would go again just for that, because it was cool to be in that environment. And plus, you know, there are people that taught me had worked in studios before, so you got a little bit of that environment. Like, they had the Scrum, you know, for scheduling and so on, so you get a little bit of taste of that.
Yeah.
But I'm not a huge fan of C++. I started with C#, so it's like going back 20 years for me.
Yes, exactly, right? The memory management and pointers and all that nonsense.
Yeah, so, I mean, I wasn't a huge... I was usually frustrated. Like, I even was asking people during final project, like, man, can we just use XNA for this? Like, I don't want to, you know, write these math libraries, but...
yeah, really, right? It's like a lot of work that's already done for you, so you're like, why am I reinventing the wheel right now?
Exactly, yeah. It feels like you're just doing something that other people have done better already, so...
Yeah, exactly. And granted, yeah. I understand it and I see the value, because this way you understand or know how things work, why they work that way, right?
Right, yeah.
But at the same time, you have a respect for the fact that, you know, they have been done already by people who probably have much, much more experience, right?
Exactly, yeah. And, well, I mean, okay, to be fair, it made me understand C# at a deeper level too, which is great. So, I mean, it wasn't a waste of time. It was just frustrating at points. So.
Yeah, definitely. And you can see developers or C# developers who have a C++ background definitely get a better understanding of memory management, how to get better speed out of the engine itself or frameworks.
Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, they have garbage everywhere, no object pooling, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, the basics of game development.
Right, yeah. That's true.
Worked on this game in C#, then you went to school, learned a little bit of C++ there, and they had you work on your own engine. And then while you're in school, you helped coordinate the indie game Summer Uprising, right? So I know what that experience was like. So why don't you tell me what it was like on your end?
Well, it was pretty stressful, to be honest, because like when we did that, I was right in the middle of a project for school.
Yeah.
So it was like overtime hours for school as well. I was doing like 8-hour schoolwork, and then they wanted to meet up at somebody's house afterwards and so on.
Yep.
And I actually found myself like, if anyone's listening that was in my project, I'm sorry, but I was like ditching out on school projects to go and like make up for the uprising and then like vice versa and so on. Yeah. It was there wasn't enough time for both, so I had to cut something and go back and forth between it. It was really stressful, but I kind of knew like I really wanted to do the uprising and give back a little bit to the community. And yep. I think it ended up being pretty good, so I think it was worth it in the end, you know.
Yeah, no, definitely. I agree. And I think it was a great way for us both to get our foot in the door and help out other people in the community along the way, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I went to GDC earlier this year, and people came up to me and were like, "Oh, Michael Hicks, you the Uprising." Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it was cool to meet all types of people around the community, you know. It was cool.
And you're fans of their work, you know, so it's nice that you're able to contribute and give back.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely neat.
Chris Steele is one of the first guests that I had on this podcast as well, and he coordinated the second Uprising, did all the web development and things like that. And I think seeing like the scale of this kind of thing really helps you appreciate community in game development, but also how much work goes into marketing, promoting your own titles, right?
Yeah, because before that, like, I pretty much was I started off just putting a game up on XBLIG, and I was like, oh, whatever, you know, next, yep. Let's work on the next game now.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but it really is, it's a skill all in itself, you know, so yeah, definitely got to spend some time with it.
It really is a full-time job, don't you think? I mean, you know, marketing and promoting your game itself on top of having a program and develop it.
Yeah, it's another career for sure. It's like another job. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes you wonder how like you know some of these one or two person shops get by, you know, doing it.
Yeah, it's definitely, and it's but you know I guess we kind of have it a little bit easier than people in the past because like of Twitter and everyone's kind of close knit in the industry, you know.
Yeah.
So that helps too. But yeah, it's definitely takes some time to do it good.
Yeah, it's much smaller than I think the games industry is much smaller than many, many other industries out there in that, like you said, we have tools to communicate, but also there are only so many people in it. And granted, it has a pretty high turnover rate. It's still people are very passionate about what they're doing, right? Very few people accidentally fall into this. Instead, they're people who have been wanting to get into it for their entire lives.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, this was my first GDC earlier this year, and I thought, and honestly, it just felt like home. Like, everyone was so nice, and like, it was such a warm environment. You know, everybody was just pretty cool people, so.
Definitely. Well, yeah. Would you consider going to another GDC again?
Yeah, if I can get some money off my new game.
Right. Yeah, that's the hard part, right?
Yeah.
Paying the dollars to go.
Yeah. Besides that, though, yeah, I would definitely go again. I thought it was great. It was a real good time.
I went to GDC Next in L.A. last week. It was a bit of a disappointment due to the size.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it was comparable, if not smaller, than the East Coast Game Conference in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yeah.
There were maybe 1,000, maybe 1,500 people at most. So I don't know if it was worth the trip. There were a handful of talks and tracks, but it was definitely not the scale of the GDC that we know and love.
Yeah. Well, it's cool that they're doing something smaller like that too, I guess, you know,
yeah,
have it more year-round.
Definitely more personal and personable, and you got to talk to all the developers who are working there. So, I mean, they had a small little indie booth, I guess we'll call it.
Yeah, well, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, still useful in that regard. okay, so you made the transition from C# developer, learned some C++, came back to C#, and stuck with XNA.
yeah.
So have you been using Unity at all? I mean, that seems to be the hot tool at this point. And if not, why? Or why did you stick with the tool of choice you have now?
Well, I started working on Pillar back in 2012. And it was around that time where the new consoles were coming out. And it's like, what do I do? You know what I mean? Because not a whole lot of information was coming out. But I pretty much knew that Unity would be an option in the future because it was so popular. But I had a code base built up in XNA.
Yeah.
And I didn't really want to just abandon it. Because it was at this point, like, it's so easy for me to just get something up and running because I have all my code written and so on already, you know, in the background. So I just kind of, I just went in with XNA and, you know, it was kind of disappointing because I was originally wanting to target Xbox One. but they don't have XNA support, unfortunately. So in the future, I'll probably be making the switch to Unity. I haven't thought about it too much, but that seems to be the tool to go to these days. So
yeah, I have seen some people write XNA to Unity wrappers or exporters.
Yeah.
Alexander Jordan did it for Cute Things Die Violently. James Silva did it for A Mini Game with Zombies. And finally, Luke Schneider did it for, you know, Radiant Games and all those titles. He has a brief tutorial on how to do it, but it's still a bit of a convoluted process, largely because the biggest issues are the content pipeline is completely different. There's no sprite batch. You know, it's what batches the sprite calls to the GPU on DirectX. Unity doesn't have any sort of thing like that. So what a lot of people are doing is basically taking the sprite batch calls, drawing them to 3D models and kind of like creating a, like a mesh out of it.
Yeah.
And from that mesh, they would paint the mesh with these the textures. That would essentially be their sprite.
Yeah.
So a bit of a project to get going.
Least,
but if you already have, you know, years and years of work of XNA, it's very difficult to make the transition, both like mentally and everything else, because you're so heavily invested in a current tool set.
Right. Yeah.
But you did see that yesterday Microsoft open sourced the .NET Core, so mm-hmm. there's potential for anything in the future.
Yeah, that was pretty exciting to see them do that. I was surprised, actually, to see that. But
yeah, I mean, you and I both, and then they're still partnered very heavily with Xamarin, you know, who's responsible for the open source project .NET Mono. So it'll be interesting to see how it starts to take shape, because yesterday's announcement was really around the core and the server side features.
Yeah.
But who knows what they have planned for, you know, developers and the front end people like us. I mean, I have no idea because I don't have the inside info about any of that stuff.
Maybe XNA 5.
Oh, that'd be nice, right?
Yeah.
Until then, we'll see. I'm going between Unity and Unreal, so.
Yeah. Well, I've been using Mono Game for the PS4 port.
Okay. What's that experience been like?
Well, it's still in a beta, yep. So I mean, there's some rough edges, but my game pretty much is built around sprite batch, so okay. I gotta say it's been pretty smooth.
Okay.
I wish Mono Game would come to Xbox One. If anyone's listening to this that has power over that, please bring it over.
People have tried and been trying, and yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, if Mono Game came to Xbox One, I think I would stay with Mono Game, honestly. It's been a pretty good experience. A little rough in edges, but it's in beta, so, you know, they got to work
definitely.
It out. So.
So right now it's really just like a handful of people contributing, right? I mean, so Tom Spillman basically had that branch for Sony, right?
Right, yeah.
Because he wrote for Towerfall. Which was a Ouya game that he then ported. I don't know what they wrote for in Ouya, but then ported over to Mono Games that work on PS4, and now Sony owns that branch, and people can kind of you know, get access to it when they partner up with Sony for their PS4 ports of XNA games.
Yeah, I think Towerfall was in Mono Game for Ouya as well, I think.
Oh, you're
pretty
right.
Sure.
Actually, it was, yes.
Yeah.
And then there wasn't a PS4 port, because someone had to figure out how to write it for... that platform.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty much, I mean, Tom, he's the main guy that helps you. I mean, he's always on Skype helping people out.
He's great. He is extremely helpful for the community. He's for everyone.
He's always busy, though. He's always doing something. But Tom, that's his baby. And then there's some other of it. There's a couple of us in the forums that kind of help each other out right now, literally like maybe three or four.
Yeah.
So me and Chris Steele's in there, and then a couple other people I don't know from the past, but I mean, it's still growing, just a couple people right now, but
I mean, I know several developers on PS4 are using Mono Game, but I don't know what I can and can't say, so I stay quiet.
So James Silva, we can say that because he publicly came out, right?
That's right. Yep.
So yeah, he's on there.
Yep.
So yeah, it's pretty cool stuff.
It's interesting to see like the shift of people from one platform to another as generations go on, right? Because that whole community that is in that forum now, that was essentially the Xbox Live Indie Games forums that Microsoft had 4 years ago.
Yeah, dude, honestly, like even, the guy who did Take Arms, what's his name? James Petruzzi? Is that
his
name?
Yes.
He's doing Chasm. So yeah, literally, like the PS4 forums for Mono Game is like everyone from XBLIG pretty much. So.
Oh, man. Yeah.
That's where people went.
On other platforms.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, right? Everyone's just like a few years wiser and faster programming now.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. So tell us a bit about your game then. What is this exactly? We know it's a collection of mini games, but give us the 1,000-foot view.
Okay. So, yeah, it's, like you said, it's a collection of mini games, but each mini game is supposed to represent a different type of personality that we find in people.
Okay.
So I'm a big fan of, like, psychology, took some psychology classes, and it's loosely based off this test that you take in psychology called the Myers-Briggs. They use it in the workplace, too, sometimes, but pretty much you take this test, and it tells you what your personality is, if you're introverted, extroverted, if you prefer feeling or thinking to make your decisions, and so on.
Yeah.
And I wanted to model each minigame kind of loosely off of the traits in that test. So in the pillar, there's games where you're an introverted character and you lose energy when you're around NPCs for too long. And there's characters who prefer thinking, so those are kind of like puzzle-based,
okay.
So on and so forth, right? Pretty much I just wanted to toy around with trying to have that test, or like not necessarily the test, but the traits that are explored in that test, have it in an interactive framework, because I thought that idea was kind of neat. So
okay.
That's essentially pillar.
So what kind of, I guess, puzzles or challenges do people come across this way?
So the best one to explain would probably be the introvert characters. So one of the characters in the game, he's introverted, so he loses the energy around NPCs, but he's also kind of shy. So that kind of boils down to like a stealth formula, essentially.
Ah,
so you're
okay.
Kind of, yeah, you're hiding from the other characters, kind of making your way through the level and so on. So yeah, I mean, it's little things like that.
I guess would be like running around, shoot them up, bang bang. If you were going to put these personalities into a gameplay style,
yeah, kind of, yeah, that's the gist of it. Yeah.
Okay,
so
okay, I
yeah.
Like it. So how far down the development pipeline are you at this point?
Well, I always say I'm done, and then I like redo something.
So that's life story when you're making games.
Yeah, but because I thought it was done last August when we did the announcement on the PS blog, but I'm thinking. It should be out this winter. Fingers crossed. I don't want to have a release date, but it's pretty close. It's definitely at the end of the cycle for sure. So,
okay. Well, that's comforting.
Yeah, I mean, I worked on it for off and on. I started working on it in 2012 for
yes.
a year, it was off and on, and then when I graduated school last July, I've been working on it full time since then. So, I mean, I'm working on it a little longer than I would have hoped, but I've been kind of happy with how it came out, so I wanted to devote the full love and attention that it deserves.
So is this like your full-time gig now, or do you have like side jobs that you do as well, or how does it work?
Right now this is my full-time gig. I was, the last game, Sententia, it made a decent amount. I'm not rich or anything, but it was enough to like start the company and like get this going for the PS4, but if this game doesn't go so well, then yeah, I'll have to get some side work.
Well, you know what? That's the joy of being a programmer though, right? Like you can almost always be employed because there's such a high demand for them.
Yeah, I mean, and you can always find freelance work. So
definitely, I mean, yeah working from home and doing whatever else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's pretty nice.
What do you think is the biggest snag that you've run into so far?
honestly,
what do you publicly say?
Yeah, well, honestly, it's been so. I mean, I've worked on stuff. Like I said, I did some games in high school, and when I was in high school, I found it frustrating to go to school because it's like I
want
to.
It's a distraction.
Work on this game.
For what you really want
yeah.
to do.
I always look forward to summer break because it's like, oh, finally there's like 2 or 3 months of just uninterrupted work time, you know?
Yep.
But now that I'm doing this full time, I find that the opposite is true. And it's like come back to burn me. I've like seriously burned myself out.
Right, yeah,
like working too long.
Yeah, I know. So. And I find I run into the same issue too because I've been working on this Unity game for like 6 months now. Not very complicated, but I really don't have time to work on it at night from like 9 p.m. on. And by that
yeah.
point, I've been either sitting up at a computer all day or running around Philadelphia having meetings. So
yeah.
by the time you get home, your mind's like, the last thing you want to do is sit in front of a computer and program, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Sure,
yeah.
You probably want to play games or watch, you know, movies from time to time.
Yeah. Well, it's just I love doing it so much that I just can't, like, get away from it. That's
yeah.
been my problem. And I was working 12-hour days for, like, 6 or 7 months. And then by the end of it, I was like, I really love doing this, but like, like your mental health really goes down the drain really fast like
Definitely.
That. You have to learn how to balance it and like go out and, you know, socialize a bit too. So
it is a sacrifice to say the least, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And but that's the thing though, it sucks is like because you're telling yourself, you know, if I don't do this work, it's not going to get done. And that's the worst part, like that's true.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
I guess what else is frustrating is you have I just read an article yesterday in Touch Arcade, and they're talking about how, God, what was that game that just came out? one moment, I'll find it. Looking. Okay, Monument Valley.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So essentially, they had released the game for, I don't know, $3 or $4 or whatever else. And after a bit, they add DLC for it for $2 or $3. And people were furious. They just started one-starring the whole game on iOS.
Oh, wow.
So the game is $4. It basically got 5 stars across the board from, you know, Touch Arcade and every other large outlet.
Yeah.
And their DLC is $2. And people are just pissed off about this. And it's frustrating because I feel like so many players don't quite comprehend how much time and effort and everything else developers put into this stuff, right, into their work.
Yeah, and that's something that really has frustrated me for a long time, too, is, like, the pricing model in this industry. Like, to me, it's ridiculous. Because, like, I mean, when you look at a film, because how we judge games is how long of playtime it is, right?
Which is absurd, right?
Yeah, because, like, we buy $20 DVDs for a two-hour film, but, like, if there was a two-hour game for $20, people would hit the fan, I guarantee it, right?
Oh, definitely.
So, like, I don't know, you know, it's weird. I don't understand why we have that mentality, but I guess it's just been drilled into our heads from the past or something. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah.
For sure.
Like, I mean, what's the happy medium? I mean, I just finished playing through Alien Isolation. Loved that game. But it was like 6 or 7 hours too long. Way too much backtracking. And parts of it were definitely slow. Like, you could clearly see some parts were added in there just to kind of buffer the time.
Right, yeah.
And looking back, like, it was maybe about 15 hours to finish, which is about what the reviews said. And I remember starting off the game and thinking, how is this going to be 15 hours? And then as I'm playing through it, I finished it because I really enjoyed the game.
Yeah.
There were clearly times that I'm sitting there thinking, like, this is entirely too long at this point. Where I would have gladly have paid $60, which I did, for the full game. But I would have rather had it be a 4 or 5 hour outstanding experience than a 15-hour right. mediocre experience.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I don't know. I feel like games are, like, a little too expensive. We'll see, once again, like, this is where indies can fix this, I think, because those $60 games, they're $60 for a reason, right? Because there's, like, hundreds of people. I assume that's why they're $60, because there's hundreds of people working on the game, right? You know, but with indies, you know, it's, like, maybe 5 people, you know, small teams, so they can have, you know, more control over the pricing and lower it and still work out okay, so.
Yeah, and you know, now we see that games are going for $60, right? And very often they are digital releases instead of retail.
Yeah.
So you'll see the complaint, hey, you know, why is it still $60 if it doesn't cost you anything to produce it? Sure, the physical good is no longer there, but at the same time, the games are exponentially larger now than they were before, right? Those, you know, 2K or 4K textures that you have drawn to the screen, they didn't just get there themselves, right? It's that much more work and detail that people have to put into these things.
Yeah.
So yeah, I wish it was as easy as people think it is, but I don't know. Maybe in time, developers, journalists, and players can all kind of see eye to eye or have a better understanding.
Yeah, well, it makes it hard for me because I'm trying to, like, price this game, you know, Pillar that's coming out. It's like, well, you know, I kind of spent 2 years of my life on this thing.
Yeah.
You know, it feels worth, like, 10 or 15 to me, but I also know, like, the game isn't a huge game, so that might be too much for people, and, you know, I have to, like, balance all these things, and it's pretty difficult, honestly.
Yeah, it's, like, mentally straining, and I'm sure you see every marketplace is radically different from other ones, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, we know that from XBLIG, right?
That's right.
So, I mean, like, nothing that's $5 seems to sell on that channel, which, by the way, that's the only choice I have. It's 1, 3, or 5, so
yeah,
they'll probably go for 5 on 360, and I don't expect it to sell very well, because it seems only $1 games sell really well on that channel. So
yeah, and it's a catch-22 in your regard, right? Because say you release it for Xbox Live Indies for $5, right? People are going to say, oh, $5 game on here? Crazy, not going to buy it. But
right.
If you release it for, I don't know, $10, we'll say, on PS4, you have a $10 release there. And then if you know, people, you can say, hey, well, you know, I'm giving for half the cost on another platform, right? And it's going to look, you know, as good or whatever else.
Yeah.
But if you release it for $1 on Xbox Indies, all of a sudden your PS4 fans feel like they got, you know, shafted because they're like, why am I paying ten times as much? That's crazy.
Yeah, it's definitely difficult to – and I think Smudge Cat Games from The Last Uprising that we did, he ran into that problem, I think he did, because I remember on Steam it was a couple dollars more, and then it was $5 on 360, but then it sold so poorly he lowered it to 3 and then his sales went up or something. Like, it makes no sense to me, but whatever.
yeah, and I mean, the developers are stuck between a rock and a hard place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as much as we'd like to believe it's the developers dictating the cost, I strongly believe that it's actually the players, you know, as illustrated through Monument Valley, right?
Yeah.
They, the players are saying, we're not valuing your game or your DLC at $2. Therefore, we're going to give you 1-star ratings and, you know, put you into oblivion so no one can find your game again. It's like, wait, $2?
Yeah.
This is, you know, nothing that we're talking about here. You know, people spend more than $2 on coffee every day.
Right.
But you're going to spend $2 on experience that someone, you know, spent, you know, years writing?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no, that's so true. I always bring that up. It's like, man, you go to Starbucks and I buy like a $5 coffee, you know, like you said, it's like, well, I don't understand the, it's just so weird. I don't know. Hopefully it changes. I think it's starting to a little bit, but maybe not in the good way, because like, look at these bundles, right?
Yes.
Like, I feel like maybe it's been a little bit better, but at least last year or so, I feel like they've started to devalue indie games in a way, because everyone just waits for them to go on sale or go on these bundles. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And now, granted, we have, you know, games that are released more often than ever as well, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I often buy games in bundles, or I don't really so many bundles anymore, but like on Steam, I wait until it goes on sale, largely because I have such a massive backlog of games that I will never get to the things I have to play, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And even now, looking at XCOM Enemy Within on iPad, right? So granted, it came out like 2 or 3 years ago on, which platforms? I had it on
Xbox, I think. Yeah, 360.
Actually, you know, I had this on Steam, but yeah, it was on Xbox as well.
Oh, okay.
So it's $12 on here. This is an awesome, awesome game. And for $12, it's a steal. But if people see $12 in the iOS store, like, nah, forget
it. Yeah, exactly. Like, that's way too much. Yeah, I know. Yeah, you're right. I think the customers do. I mean, there's some people who've come out and they're just like, well, I'm just going to stick to my pricing model. I think it's, you know, worth or whatever. And I respect that, but it seems to be, you know, if you're actually in this to make money, you know, then the consumers do kind of dictate that, right? So it just depends. Like you said, I do think they have probably more control over the industry than what they are thinking. But
yeah, but I think it's interesting because a lot of students say, oh, I want to make games or want to get into games. And you try telling them about these kinds of things, right?
Yeah.
But they don't want to pay much right up front, but then they realize once they actually get into the life of having to sell games and make a living for it, all of a sudden they think, whoa, wait a minute, maybe I should be, you know, paying more money for this stuff.
Right, yeah. Well, it's been difficult for me because, I mean, honestly, like, I started off doing this just because I wanted to do it, but now I'm in this position where, like, I'd like to do it full-time, so I'm having to, you know, I don't necessarily really, I mean, I'd like to just get up and do whatever I want, but since I'm trying to also make a living, I have to, you know, educate myself in some of these things as well, you know, and, you know, see how the market works and so on, so...
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah. I mean, there's no happy medium for us right now.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, well, we'll see how it plays out. So the last time I had someone on the show, it was Eric Umenhofer, and he had a question. His question was, how do you view the indie scene 5 years from now? So I want to know what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I'm hoping that the indies keep making kind of more innovative stuff and break away from, because I feel like right now a lot of indies, they still kind of approach games like big studios do, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And they analyze the market and they make games they think are going to fit for that, and that's kind of what's accepted. But I'd like to see indies kind of keep making creative, innovative stuff that's way different than what's being made, and hopefully we kind of develop a scene that's kind of like, because when I look at like the Oscars or something, like, they always seem to have an award ceremony that fits, like, the best well-crafted movie. And I feel like we're still, like, developing that type of mentality of, like, what is a good... Does that make sense? Like, a game that would be on par to, like, something the Oscars would nominate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like the indies are still making kind of blockbuster mentality type games. So I'm hoping that kind of changes and we see more creative stuff coming as well. So hopefully in 5 years there's more diversity and so on. That'd be cool.
And I think it's the indies who are driving the creative forces that then cause the AAA to kind of catch on, view what's going on, and then, you know, pivot that way as well.
Yeah, you know what's funny is I met some people who worked at I probably shouldn't mention the studio, but they work in AAA games, and they were making a joke about how, yeah, it's the indies, they're the ones that do all this new stuff, and if it works, then we just copy off of them. And they were, like, totally serious, too. I was like, what?
And such is the way of life. Well, I mean, for AAAs, right, it's expensive to see what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah, they can't take the financial risk. Yeah,
who's going to spend $50 or $60 million saying, like, should we try this, should we not?
Yeah, well, what sucks is the indies are the ones that, you know, they're the starving artists, right? And they're the ones that are kind of pushing the medium forward. But
they're the ones largely taking the risk.
Yeah, but it's a sacrifice you make, you know? So
that's right. So now that we got Eric's questions done, what is your question for the next developer I have on the show? You can take a moment to decide. It's all right. I'll play some Jeopardy music while we're deciding.
I think I got it. Okay, my question is, how do you stay motivated during game development?
During game development. It's actually a very good question.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what they say.
Well, let me hear a quick recap from you. What works for you?
Back when I was making the smaller games on XBLIG, like, the idea of releasing it and just getting it done was pretty exciting and kind of kept me motivated, but now it's, you know, it's a harder question to answer now because, like I said, I keep redoing it over and over and I've kind of lost the whole excitement of release.
Yeah.
So I guess what excites me now and how I stay motivated is the idea of actually making something that's something I can look back at later in my life and be like, yeah, that was a really good game. I'm glad I spent my time working on that. So now it's more of like a quality thing, where in the past I was just excited to like get something on the store.
Yeah.
So, yeah, having something to look back at, and that kind of keeps me motivated to keep doing it because I love making games. So,
cool. I like it. All right, well, Michael, thank you very much for joining us. Love to have you on after your game is released so we can follow up and see how it's gone for you so far.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, thanks for having me on, man. Had a good time.
How can developers get in touch with you? Do you have a Twitter? What is your your website for your game? Give us the lowdown.
Okay, yeah. My Twitter is MichaelArtsXM, all one word. That's my personal Twitter. Yeah, XM, like the radio station.
Okay.
That's my personal Twitter. But Pillar of the Game is also on Twitter. It's Pillar of the Game. And then you can check out the game at pillargame.com. So... No, that's all my stuff to plug. Be sure to check it out.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
All right. Have a nice one. We'll be right back.